Welcome back to the second hour, everybody, here on this Friday, May 22nd. Happy to welcome you back into our ESPN studios here in Northern Nevada. Coming up this second hour here on this Friday edition of the Spencer Wilson Show, the NHL discussing potential sites and have gotten the list under 10. And also they are moving forward on their vote to... they're moving forward with the vote on their 2014 expanded Stanley Cup playoff format. So we'll talk about that. We'll have our pal Rick in here. I am sure of that. He will be here talking to us later this hour. And then I will take a look at some events that happened on this day and some opinion or a point of view coming from a former baseball player on the state of baseball right now. But did want to remind everybody... Coming up this Monday, it is Memorial Day, and we will have sports on that day. Here on ESPN Radio, it's all day long. Super Bowl I starting at 9 a.m., and then from about noon on, about 12:30 on, the rest of the day, it is classic World Series games. So tune in for that starting at 9 a.m. here on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM, this Monday. So don't miss out on that. But now let's start talking about Major League Soccer a little bit, as MLS is starting to nail down some more details about that Orlando tournament. So talked about this earlier this week and a little bit last week, I believe, as well, but they were talking about how they could get their season restarted. Of course, Major League Soccer was about two or so games into their season before the hiatus and before the pause of the world of sports. And they're now looking at, sending teams down to the Wide World of Sports complex there at the Walt Disney Resort, which, of course, Walt Disney owns ESPN. So sending all the teams down there and doing a tournament that would help make up for some of the games lost due to the coronavirus pause. So the way they have laid out doing that is that they will split teams into four groups. Three of those groups will have six teams in them. Then the one other group will have eight teams in them, ensuring that everyone will play five games. And the top two will advance from each group to a knockout stage. So it's kind of a mini type of World Cup format. Instead of eight groups, you have four groups, and you'll have the top eight teams moving on to the knockout stage. And the hope was that they would be able to get these guys, all these teams, down to Orlando and start training at early June, right around June 1st or June 2nd. But with that being only about 10 or so days away now, they don't feel as though that is a feasible option, which makes sense. The last thing you want to do when you are getting sports back up and running again is rush into it. And if you rush into it, and, we want to be starting by June. So everyone, go, get down there, be there. And then all of a sudden you got guys testing positive, guys, if you have other health issues or you have guys that are, just put into very tough positions, it's going to make everything look worse. So instead of that, they're now looking like it's more likely to have teams head down to Orlando in mid-June and then maybe get started right around mid-July. Because I think they were talking about 3 to 4 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, maybe 3 to 4 weeks, to allow players and teams to retrain and get themselves back into game position. So they're looking now at mid-June to head down there, and then when they get to Orlando, teams would be regularly tested and quarantined throughout this process. And, of course, you're going to get some players pushing back, which they are receiving for a few reasons. One, they do not want to be away from their families for about 10 or so weeks. Upwards of almost 3 months, and also having to be, away from their families and living in quarantine life again. They're getting some pushback about that. Also getting some pushback about hotel staff being able to come and go and how that could disrupt that kind of quote-unquote MLS bubble that they're trying to create to protect players and teams. And all of that is understandable. We've seen some pushback like that before, especially I think in the world of Major League Baseball. We've seen some players say that, older players say that I'm not sure if I'm okay being away from my family for however long I might be. And in Major League Soccer's case, it's 10 weeks about. So, again, close to 3 months without seeing their families. And you can understand why they wouldn't be overly excited for that. That's going to be tough for them it's going to be tough for everyone involved to go through that and not have to not get to really see each other. They can still obviously FaceTime or Zoom or whatever you want to use these days. But that is a tough part of it. And that's a part of it that I think every sport is probably going to have to accept, that you're going to go through some kind of time period where you're not going to be able to see your families. And I'm not sure if that's something that Major League Baseball has addressed that right now, especially with more talk of trying to use home stadiums. That might be, present a different problem to them. But in Major League Soccer's case, you know, they want to make sure that they set this up right and they can get this done, that they don't risk anybody, you know, passing this virus along to a family member if they get it. So you can understand where both sides are coming from, and MLS and MLS Players Association still have to, you know, finalize a lot of the details, because really all that's really down on paper right now is the format of the tournament. The fact that you'll have four groups, the fact that the top two move on to a knockout stage, and then you play through there. We know that the Supporters Shield winners from last season, so the best team of the regular season, at being LAFC, MLS Cup winners from last year being Seattle, U.S. Open Cup champions last year being Atlanta, as well as the host city Orlando will be the seeded teams in their groups. Toronto will also be seeded in the group of eight, which again, how does Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver get down to Orlando with the border still being closed between Canada and the United States for non-essential travel? Now, they could, I guess, clarify this as essential to get those players down and those teams down to Orlando, but that's still a problem too, and that's a problem the NHL is going through right now with seven Canadian-based teams and wanting to use possibly some of those cities. That's something that every sports team or every sports league that uses teams in Canada, whether it's seven like the NHL or just one like the NBA and MLB, you still have to address that and how you're going to get those teams and those players back into the United States for these tournaments. So a lot still to be ironed out. We do know that the group games will count towards the regular season, but the knockout games will not, which makes sense if you're going to have, you know, make sure that everyone plays five games in the group stage, make sure everyone can add five games to their record, and then let the knockout games just be that, which is standalone knockout games, which I'm okay with. And I think this is a good idea. I think it's an idea that, you know, the NHL looking at expanding their playoffs, MLS looking at this tournament to get going again, Major League Baseball had talks of a possible tournament-type format, although those seem to have been completely taken off the table. But not a surprise that I think these type of options are being explored, and I think they're good options. Tournaments can help make up games like the MLS is using in their example and in their thought process and ideas. So why not? Why not use tournaments, and why not use, you know, those kind of whether it's one location like Major League Soccer is trying to do, or a few locations like the NHL is trying to do. It is, I think, a good option as to try and get, you know, players back into the swing of things. You can do games at a little more of a quicker pace. You can get guys back in shape and they can stay in shape. And you also make up some time lost for the season. So I'm all for it. And I think it's a good move for Major League Soccer. We'll have to see the rest of the details getting lined up and how they and the players kind of work out those few issues that they have right now. But I think it's a good option for Major League Soccer, and I hope they can move forward with that. And maybe we can see that, you know, tournament starting in about 2 months' time or a little less. That's the hope anyway. Now let's switch over to the world of the NBA for a second, kind of just for more of a lighthearted story. We all know Giannis Antetokounmpo, the reigning MVP of the NBA, a man that was leading the Milwaukee Bucks to their number one seed in the Eastern Conference for the playoffs this year. And he has, in my opinion, one of the best nicknames in sports. I mean, the Greek Freak fits him very well. One, he is Greek, so that makes sense to call him that. And two, the Freak moniker, because the dude is 6'11", can hit three-pointers on occasion, and can send balls into the, I mean, just block shots into the third or fourth row, if not further up. I mean, he is a freak of an athlete, and he is Greek, which makes sense that people call him the Greek Freak. What is funny, though, is that he doesn't really remember where that nickname came from, which I know the way he recalls it, there's a nice article on ESPN.com about it, but the way he recalls it is that he was in practice, they were fooling around, and, you know, he started doing some crazy dunks or whatever, and then all of a sudden guys started calling him the Greek Freak, but he doesn't really remember who the first guy was. And I feel like that's going to start to become the new wave controversy. Do you remember that? I feel like it was I in junior high when that happened? I feel like that's about when it was happening, when I was in junior high, right around the mid to late 2000s, where there was a controversy over who started the wave, how the wave got started. And there were two people that were just going at each other's throats about the fact that, no, he started it, no, he started it, this is where it began, or this is where it began. And I feel like we might be going down that road. I feel like if the Greek Freak and Milwaukee win some championships down the line, you're going to have like three or four different guys that used to be his teammates come out and be like, oh yeah, I'm the one that called him that for the first time. And we'll see a big fight start over that. But I think it's one of the best nicknames in sports right now. I think it suits him. I think the guy is incredibly fun to watch. And what's nice also is that he kind of realized how much that was taking off. And he leaned on veterans of the team to be like, hey, how can I make sure I don't get too caught up in this? How do I make sure I don't become too cocky with this and I can still stay kind of grounded and stay who I am? And, that shows you, again, some great maturity from him and how he's continued to handle it. And I think that's why he's become such a dominant player and why he continues to get better. And I can't wait to see what he can continue to do in the world of the NBA. Hopefully whenever that does get going again. And we can maybe, I mean, if we do get the end of this season, if we do get maybe some expanded playoffs there for the NBA, I still think Milwaukee is one of the best teams there and has one of the best chances of winning it. So we'll have to see how that plays out. But nonetheless, he's a very fun player to watch, and I think it's one of the best nicknames in sports right now. All right, when we come back from the break, some news out of the NHL. The NHL getting their potential sights for a restart under 10 and voting on that new playoff format, which we'll talk about a little bit more again here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
The NHL looking like it's getting a little bit closer and closer to determining how they're going to return to play, as they are reportedly down to about 8 or 9 sites that could house 12 or so teams in one location. So of course they've talked about the idea of there was an idea of a tournament at one point for the NHL that has been scrapped, although they are talking about expanding the playoffs to 24 teams. But in terms of you know, trying to get those games in and possibly finishing out any part of the regular season that they could, they would look to go to one of, you know, whether it's two cities, like they had talked about when they specifically mentioned the expanded playoff form, but whether it's two cities, four cities, or 8 or so cities, they are starting to wind down. They are starting to narrow down their options. Now, they did have about 15 markets that submitted to participate in hosting these games, such as Vegas, Minnesota, Edmonton, Toronto, Vancouver, amongst others. And again, that issue comes in of how do you make it work in with Canada? Because with the border still being closed for non-essential travel, you have 17% of the players outside of North America, so outside of the United States and Canada, that would need to try to get back to the U.S. or Canada to play these games. So it's that seems to be the biggest hurdle, along with testing right now, because you don't want, if you're the NHL, you don't want to seem as though you're taking tests away from the public so that your players and your coaches can have them. And what they might try to do is look for an option similar to what Major League Baseball tried to do, which is what MLB reached a deal with a testing lab in Utah, that the lab would provide roughly about 3,000 tests for baseball players and support staff, but also provide thousands of tests for the public. So if the NHL can strike that kind of deal as well somewhere, that'll help them and help, you know, obviously the public and help the image of everything as well. Because, again, we all want sports to come back, but not if it's going to endanger more lives than it's going to help, or at least, you know, help people have a distraction from the coronavirus world that we're still living in. So it's not going to be easy. It's not going to be, something that just goes flying by for the NHL. And they'll most likely try to do multiple games per day, which makes sense. And talking about it from a Major League soccer standpoint as well, when you try to have these games and these positions where players can play a little more often and not only get back in shape, but stay in shape, I think that would be a great way for the NHL to do it, to do that as well. If you have, let's say, four hub cities, and you send these different teams to these different cities, and then you have multiple games a day, it allows those guys to rest. Obviously, you need them to rest, but also stay in shape and stay in game form, which is important, especially in the world of the NHL. I mean, Major League Soccer, you're coming off just the start of your season and figuring out how to play the rest of it. For the NHL, you're thinking about the playoff run and in the end of your season, or the playoffs, which are massively important games, and you want your guys to be able to be healthy and be able to stay in shape and be able to compete for a championship the entire time that you do this. So, obviously, testing's still a problem there. How do you get those 17% of players outside North America back to North America? And, you know, Major League Soccer talked about that in the last segment with their three teams up in Canada. The NHL has seven teams up in Canada, and a few of those are in position to play in the playoffs. So, again, the border between the United States and Canada is closed right now for non-essential travel, but is this a point where, you know, you can say that it's kind of essential? It's essential for these teams to play these games to try to get maybe some kind of TV revenue, to try to get some kind of closure on the season, try to get some kind of paycheck for the players, whatever it might be. I think there are ways where you could categorize it as essential to get around that, but there's still the health problem and health issue to that, and then really kind of the image that you take on as a sports league. And I mean, you don't want to make a comeback and seem like the bad guy. That's not what you want to do. So if the NHL has to start jumping through all these different hoops for testing and for travel and to go across the border between the United States and Canada, it could start to make them look a little bit worse than how they want to be portrayed. So I think the NHL is on a bit of not thin ice, but they're in a dangerous position right now where if they try to push too hard for that, and Gary Bettman, the commissioner, has come out and said there's a lot of fan support for them to come back. And you would hope that, you know, you continue to have that and fans continue to stay understanding in this time of uncertainty and not knowing, you know, how these seasons could play out if they play out at all. But I'm sure it's giving them a little bit more confidence to see how much backing they have from the fans. But it's also important not to see that and think that you're getting this kind of invincible feel and that you can just go about making this plan the way you think is best, even though it brings, you know, health concerns and all these travel concerns into the realm of possibility. So I think it's not an easy position for anyone to be in, and we've talked about that, but I like the steps that all of these sports leagues individually have started to take, because they are taking it very seriously, as you would hope they would. With everybody's health involved, whether it be the players or the coaches or the families of these players and coaches or the staff at the, you know, the support staff for the team or the staff at the arenas they're playing in. And it's just good to see that, and it makes you feel a little more comfortable with all of these efforts to get back to playing, knowing that they are taking those kind of precautions. So, again, the 2014 playoff that they are voting on, and we could see the results of that voting as early as tonight. But no guarantee on that. But of course, that format would set up a series of play-in games between the 5 seeds and the 12 seeds. 5 would play 12, 6 would play 11, 7, 10, 8, 9. And those 4 play-in series would all be best of 5. And then the top 4 teams in each conference would play a little mini tournament between them that would affect the way they are seeded in that tournament. So the top 4 play their own little 3-game mini tournament. Seeds 5 through 12 battle their best of 5 play-in series. And after that, you're left with eight teams on both sides, which is 16 teams, which then you play out a normal best of seven, four-round Stanley Cup playoff. Which, again, the expansion of the playoffs, I think, is a really smart idea because you're allowing teams such as maybe the Arizona Coyotes, who were on the bubble. They were right there fighting for a playoff spot, and they had 12 games left. So who's to say they wouldn't have been able to get into that playoff field? So expanding the playoff field from 16 to 24 just allows those teams that were like, hey, you know, if the season doesn't resume and they jump right to the playoffs, you know, we kind of get screwed out of it. And now they wouldn't. Now they would be able to, you know, play in the playoffs and into play in series and justify their spot in that tournament and a chance to win the Stanley Cup. Because I think the fans, no surprise, the fans are behind a champion being crowned. I think players and coaches are behind that as well. Just to have some kind of closure to this season. And I think it's a good idea. I think it's an interesting idea, too. I think we'll see a lot of fun matchups. I mean, we know the Eastern Conference play-in series would see the 5th-seed Penguins taking on the 12th-seed Canadiens. The 6th-seed Hurricanes taking on the 11th-seed New York Rangers. The 7th-seed New York Islanders taking on the 10th-seed Florida Panthers. And the 8th-seed Maple Leafs taking on the 9th-seed Columbus Blue Jackets. So already, some intriguing matchups there in those opening rounds. And then you have the Bruins, the Lightning, the Capitals, and the Flyers as your four teams that would get a first-round bye there. Looking at the Western Conference, the reigning champion Blues, Colorado Avalanche, Golden Knights, and Dallas Stars would all get a first-round bye. And then you'd get to see the play-in series of the 5th-seed Oilers against the 12th-seed Blackhawks, which I'm already interested in that, although it might be a little lopsided towards Edmonton. Two classic NHL franchises right there. 6th-seed Predators against the 11th-seed Coyotes. 7th-seed Canucks, who are having a very good season. I think a little bit of a better season than most anticipated, but I was pretty pumped to watch them play. The Canucks take on the 10th-seed Minnesota Wild. Then the 8th-seed Flames taking on the 9th-seed Jets, seeing that Calgary-Winnipeg matchup there, which I think would be a lot of fun as well. So I think this is a smart idea. It's a good idea. Hopefully the NHL can find some sort of solution to those tests, obviously with that being a big-time issue for pretty much every sports league that's trying to get back into action. But hopefully we see them take some good steps, and we'll see the sport of hockey return sooner than later. Hopefully we can see most of these sports return sooner than later, now that we're getting into close to June and close to July, where a lot of sports leagues were hoping to return. And hopefully we get that and we can enjoy some live sports throughout our summer. But nonetheless, you just hope that everyone takes the right health precautions and they continue. I mean, Gary Bettman has said, as well as, you know, Adam Silver and Roger Goodell and all the commissioners, that they're listening to health officials, they're listening to state governments, and they are going to cooperate with what they say is the best way to do it. And hopefully they stay true to that and we can enjoy some sports later on throughout the summer and hopefully into the fall as we try to kind of inch by inch return to some kind of normalcy in our world. But nonetheless, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will have our pal Saxman Rick in studio, and we'll see what's on his mind, because I can never even imagine what's going through his mind. But it should be some fun stuff. So stay tuned for that here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
We are back, and so is the Sax Man.
I is here. Have no fear. The Sax Man is here, baby. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing good, man. How you doing?
I feel better than James Brown.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, and I better feel better than James Brown. He's dead.
I wasn't going to bring that up, but, I
just
figured.
It is what it is. You know, it definitely is what it is. So, it's a happy Friday, baby.
It
ready
is.
Ready for the weekend?
We are getting closer. I'm always ready for the weekend.
The weekend's already started for me.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Even though you're still here at work, you're in that weekend state of mind. mind
I'm totally
already.
In the, I got that weekend state of mind going. You know, also got that full week of you know, sports history going through my head this week.
You always do.
I love finding all those cool little tidbits, and it's been an interesting week in sports history this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Well, you know, earlier this week on the 18th, way back in 1977, the great one himself, Wayne Gretzky, had his final playoff hat trick, the 10th of his career, which is the most ever.
That's crazy.
I got to see Gretzky play.
Of course you did.
Of course I did. I saw him play in Madison Square Garden. But
oh,
I remember
my gosh.
The first time I got to see him play, I was traveling with a band way back in the day, and I got to see him practicing with the Edmonton Oilers up in Edmonton, Alberta, at the Edmonton Mall, at the West Edmonton Mall, the largest mall in the world at the time.
Yeah.
They had a full-size hockey rink in the middle of the mall, and the Oilers were practicing there.
That's ridiculous.
So it was great to see him play at that point.
I bet.
Also on the 18th, back in 2004, Randy Johnson pitched
That's
a perfect
right.
game. He was 40 years old. He was the oldest pitcher ever at that time to pitch a perfect game. And it was the 17th perfect game in Major League Baseball history.
The big unit.
The big unit
the
himself,
big unit.
Man, definitely.
He is still my favorite baseball player.
He's one of the greats. I always love the video clip of him exploding the bird.
Oh, my gosh,
I felt
yes.
so bad for the bird. I mean, it's horrible to know that that poor bird was demolished, but...
It was truly a cartoon moment, because as you would see those cartoon birds kind of pop up into a ball of feathers, that's literally what happened.
That's exactly what it
Just
looked like.
Just this white swoop that came down then into camera frame and then
poof. Just gone.
Poofs into feathers.
Just
it's,
gone.
It's unreal.
So let's go way back in sports history.
Ooh.
Way back to 1962.
Okay.
And today, in 1962, on the 22nd of May, the legendary Roger Maris walked 5 times in a game. For then, at the point that's the record. 5 times getting walked, 5 times in a 9-inning game. He was walked 4 times intentionally, which was the record at the time.
Jeez.
That was the year after it hit 61. So nobody was pitching to Roger.
Yeah, no one wanted to touch that.
If he was on a hot streak, you didn't want to pitch to Roger Maris, but you had to deal with pitching to Mickey Mantle.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, what a choice.
Yeah.
Who do you pitch to? How do you make that decision?
I mean, talk about
a
rock and a hard place.
Yeah. But on this day, also on this day, many years later in 1990, well, that 4-time intentional walk, the 4 times intentional walks that Roger Maris got back in 62, well, Andre Dawson was walked 5 times, which is the record.
Wow.
On the same day, we're talking 28
years
later.
Crazy how those line up in sports history.
It is. It's kind of wild how that happens, you know. Definitely wild. And here's another interesting little tidbit. Gentleman who every major league, you know, a large percentage of Major League Baseball pitchers have something to be thankful for. Due to this man was born way back today in 1943 on the 22nd of May, Tommy John was born.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of pitchers that really like the fact that Tommy John was around.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because they've all run through that stuff, I'm telling you.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
You know your career had some ups and downs when you have a medical procedure named after you.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit of football.
All right.
I'd like to talk about the NFL today a little bit, too. I actually watched a really cool game last night, a replay of the original broadcast of the comeback.
Ooh.
From January 3rd, 1993, Oilers at the Bills. Frank Reich leads the most amazing comeback in the history of the NFL.
What, were they down by, was it 40 points? No.
No, it was 28-3.
That's right, 28-3.
At the beginning of the third quarter. And then he gets picked off for a pick 6 right at the beginning of the third quarter. And then they came back and won the game at overtime with a field goal from Steve Christie.
That is one of the incredible comebacks.
It was a great game
there.
To watch, though. I got to watch the entire
broadcast. On the NFL Network?
Yeah, it was on the NFL Network.
Very
it
nice.
Was really cool. Of course, they kind of, you know, shortened it down and cut out, you know, a lot of in-between play chatter, but and made it a little bit more concise. But it was a great game to watch.
Isn't it incredible when I get to watch like old games like that, whether it's on TV or it's on YouTube or wherever, It's cool just to get lost. I mean, you may already know what happens.
Right.
But getting to see again how the fans at that time reacted to it, how the players were reacting
exactly.
to it.
Exactly.
And there's a nostalgia that goes along with that. I really enjoy watching old games.
I really get a kick out of it. You know, it was funny, too, because I'd really forgotten a lot of the details of the game and how that all kind of played out.
Oh, yeah.
And I totally had forgotten the fact that Thurman Thomas was not really a major factor in that game. It was Kenneth Davis at running back that really made a lot of stuff happen in that game. It was amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. So I got to ask you a question
Ooh,
here.
All right.
Over this last week, I saw an interesting little tidbit.
Okay.
The Los Angeles Chargers.
Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Well, you know, I can't get used to saying Las Vegas Raiders either.
Yeah, I know.
You know, I saw that they had actually considered Cam Newton.
Yes, they did.
Yeah. You know, and then the whole Tyrod Taylor thing, you know, it was like, we're going to go with Tyrod.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it really comes down to the fact that, you know, they can't get Cam in to have a doctor look at him, to have the team doctors look at him. That's why I think it's been an issue on getting Cam a job. Of course, he wants to start. But
yeah.
I think Cam's going to have to back off on that a little bit and do what Jameis Winston did, you know, take a backup position and see if that can't lead to another starting job in another year or two.
Yeah, I don't think that – I mean, being a backup quarterback nowadays I don't think is as unpredictable as it was in the past.
Right.
I think you – with the medical advancements now and the technological advance with the helmet, you know that – your starting guy is going to be the guy.
Right.
But you still have a chance to do that. You
yeah.
still have a chance to be able to step in and be, you know, whether he gets injured or he's just not playing well. And Cam Newton can be an incredible asset to any team as a backup quarterback.
MVP of the league in 2015 takes the Panthers
Absolutely.
To the Super Bowl. I mean, really close to, you know, winning that game.
Yeah.
But I was just curious how you felt about the Chargers looking at Cam once you heard about that.
I didn't want them to go for him. I said that when the rumors first started surfacing that they were looking at him before the draft and everything like
right.
that. I was not overly intrigued by the idea that he could be a Charger for a few reasons. One, I thought they had just moved on from an older quarterback in Phillip Rivers.
Right.
Obviously, Newton about 6 or 7 years younger than him.
Right.
But why go from an older 30-year-old quarterback to a younger 30-year-old quarterback?
Exactly.
Stick with your young guys. Whether it's Tyrod for the first year and Herbert now sits behind him or Herbert jumps in at some point. But focus on a guy that could give you 10 to 12 or so consecutive seasons as your starting quarterback and just start to build.
Exactly.
And I hope that Cam Newton does find a team. I think he should still be in the NFL.
He deserves to be.
Absolutely. But I am very happy the Chargers went ahead and did not make a move on Cam and went with a younger guy.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is coming from a devout Chargers fan. That's
yes.
why I was curious to get your take on that.
Yes.
So rules in the NFL have been an interesting subject this week.
Oh, good mercy.
The Rooney Rule has been
yeah.
amended. You know, that I thought that they, you know, were going to really jump in with the draft pick, you know, giving people
the incentive
of the
third round
draft
pick. Yeah.
Right. But that fell by the wayside. But I do like the fact that they've expanded the Rooney
yeah.
Rule. I thought it was a great idea in the first place when it first came in. And I like the fact that the Rooney Rule has been expanded out and now there's going to be even more minority candidates interviewed.
I agree.
Give everybody a chance.
Yeah, and that's the way it should be.
Exactly.
And one thing I did talk about when that came up earlier this week was that I started getting a little concerned about how maybe much of a bigger problem this is.
Right.
You know, I mean, obviously it was a bit of an issue. That's why the Rooney Rule was put in to begin with.
Uh-huh.
But it's 2020, and
yeah.
they have to incentivize teams this much to
yeah.
look at a minority coach or
exactly.
a minority coordinator.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm happy it got amended, but I'm a little concerned now where the integrity of the NFL might be.
Exactly. Well, the thought process is, you know, of the owners, you know, it's something that they really need to get on the bandwagon with, and I do like the fact that it was expanded. Here's some other rule things that happened this week I'm really curious to get your opinion on.
All right.
And to, of course, give my opinion, because
Absolutely.
I am one of the most opinionated guys you'll ever hang with. So, the new rules, Sky Judge.
I want to see it.
I want to see it too.
It has to be in the NFL.
Yep, it has to be. They're going to be voting on it on the virtual meeting, the owners' meeting coming up this weekend, I believe it is.
Yes.
Or actually next week.
No.
It's next week.
Yeah, next Thursday.
Yeah,
I believe.
The 28th. Yep. Exactly. But what do you think about the onside kick rule?
I think it's something they need to consider because you rarely see those get recovered in the first place.
Not anymore, at least with the new rules on the kickoffs. But, you know, in the old days, the percentage, you know, when you could run up to the ball on the onside kick, there was a lot better percentage of you being able to pick it up.
Yeah,
you know, and I actually saw a top 10 best onside kicks, from the NFL Network, from the NFL Films.
Yeah,
and there was some amazing onside kicks that happened over the years, and some just unbelievable hard work by these people to get their onside kicks. The onside kick in the Super Bowl by the Saints. That wouldn't have happened. That whole play wouldn't have happened. It wouldn't have gotten the Saints their first Super Bowl win if it hadn't been under the old rules.
Yeah. And I think with the rules you have in place now, it's just almost impossible to try to get an onside kick back.
You can't run up on it.
Yeah, exactly. You can't run up on it. I think there's a rule that you can't have a certain amount of players on each side of the ball.
You can't overload one side or the other.
Yeah, and that all goes into the strategy of an onside kick.
Exactly.
So,
now, they're going to keep the onside kick as it is right now, but if they add in this new rule, in case you're not familiar with it out there, they want to be able to set it up like they did in the Pro Bowl, which we actually talked about the Pro Bowl. I was very curious to get your opinion on it at that time, because I thought it was interesting, and it came from the new league this summer.
Uh-huh.
And you get the ball with a 4th and 15 at your own 25-yard line. If you convert that 4th and 15, that's your onside kick. You keep the ball at wherever the play ends. If you don't, then the opposing team gets the ball at wherever that play ends.
Yeah,
you know.
And there's a part of me that's like, you know, let a football play decide a football game, because the onside kick just isn't really a football play anymore.
Right.
So I'm for it. I'd be okay with it. I would also be okay with them giving the teams the option.
Well, it
you
is
can
the,
try an onside kick if you want.
Right, it is
or
the that's what they're talking about.
Put
they're
it on your 25.
Give the team the option of either trying a classic onside kick under the new rules of kickoffs, or going for this new option to be able to take it 4th and 15 at their own 25.
And I'd be all okay with that.
Trying to convert that play. I'm totally down for it too. I think it would be interesting. I thought it was fun to watch.
Yeah.
They actually tried it at the Pro Bowl, and it was fun to see.
Absolutely.
I thought it was a kick. Now let's move on to a couple of sad notes.
Yes.
This week in sports history. Just earlier at the beginning of the week, we lost one of the true pioneers of the NFL. The great Phyllis George passed away at the age of 70 earlier this week.
If you've ever seen the 30 for 30 documentary film Jimmy the Greek, then you know who this woman is and the role that she played
in the
NFL.
Female sportscaster on a major broadcast network. And it was for the NFL, and the show on the NFL Today, Brent Musburger, Irv Cross, the legendary Jimmy the Greek, one of the greatest, most well-known gamblers of all time.
Oh, yeah.
And they slapped Phyllis George in there 1 year after she's won Miss America, and she's in there with the boys, and she had no clue what football was all about. She got a crash course, and she turned out to be one of the best broadcasters of her time.
Yeah.
Pioneering. She set the stage for every other woman broadcaster, sportscaster from that point on, and we're going to miss her. She was quite the person. If you don't know that much about her, just do a wiki search or Google her and get some information on her. She was amazing. Watch some old video of her. She could really do a great
I would really recommend watching that Jimmy the Greek documentary, because she's featured in that, but she also talks on the film, and you really do get an idea of kind of how she had to fight her way through kind of those stereotypes, and some that sometimes where Jimmy the Greek would kind of go after her, and she would hold her own.
She would hold her own.
She would absolutely hold her own.
I love her interviews with Joe Namath and Roger Staubach. I mean, those two interviews are legendary. Look those up on YouTube. You guys are going to kick out of that.
Oh, yeah.
And another sad note, today we just found out that the one and only Jerry Sloan, longtime coach of the Utah Jazz and longtime player for the Chicago Bulls, passed away at the age of 78, complications from Parkinson's.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jerry went to the finals twice, and of course, this ties back into watching every episode of The Last Dance over the last month plus. And I felt so bad for the Jazz at the time. They could not get past Michael Jordan. But then again, I'm a Knicks fan, and my Knicks couldn't get past Michael Jordan. I found out, here's an interesting little tidbit.
Oh, all right.
More than, let's see, 20 different Hall of Fame NBA players were eliminated by MJ in the playoffs. You know who was eliminated the most times?
Patrick Ewing.
Patrick Ewing, yep. 4 times. Yeah.
Oh, but, you poor Knicks fans.
I'm
really the poor Eastern Conference throughout
that
whole time.
I mean, you know, and it was kind of crazy because when he went to go play baseball for 2 years, the Knicks get to the finals against the Rockets. And we can't even beat the Rockets.
I know, yeah.
Can't beat Hakeem the Dream.
Had the chance then
know.
There.
We had the opportunity. MJ's sat down and playing baseball for 2 years. We can't win this. But we lost Jerry Sloan today.
Yeah.
In case everybody's only familiar with him as a coach for the Utah Jazz, he actually had a 12-year playing career as a Chicago Bull.
His number's retired.
Yeah. The first Bull to have his number retired. He still has franchise records.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and then he coached the Bulls.
Yeah,
in Michael's earliest days, when Michael first came up, Jerry Sloan was the coach before he moved on to the Utah Jazz.
Head coach of Chicago from 79 to 82.
Yep, and that last year he was the head coach was Mike's first year,
I believe. Rookie year, yeah, right out of North Carolina.
Yep, you betcha.
And speaking of The Last Dance, I loved the last few episodes they really look into the 98 finals.
Right,
how they're talking after Game 3 and Utah just gets smacked around by, I think, 40 or so points.
Oh, it
and
was even bigger than that. I think the final score was something like 112-56. It was the lowest
something
amount
like
of
that.
Points
yeah.
ever scored in a playoff game that the
and
that
they
held the Jazz
They
to.
Have that clip of Jerry Sloan coming into the post-game press conference, and he looks down at the stat sheet, and he goes,
Is this the score?
Is that the score? Is this the final? And everyone's like,
Yeah, it is. That's all you did.
That's
Jay.
All the points you got
That's
there, Jerry.
That's all that happened, Jerry. So rest in peace, Jerry Sloan. Rest in peace, Phyllis George.
Absolutely.
You both were major contributors to your fields.
Yeah.
And you will be missed. And if you're a true sports fan, you'll look up some more information on Jerry Sloan from his earlier days, if you're only familiar with his Utah Jazz days. Mm-hmm. And there's some great clips of him playing. He was a great player, solid defensive player.
Yeah.
And then Phyllis George, you got to watch the interviews with Joe Namath and Roger Staubach. I mean, and I love the story that they tell about the interview that she did with Namath. He was about an hour and a half late. He came in, did like 5 minutes worth of stuff and said, okay, that's enough. And Phyllis George went to her producer and said, I only got 5 minutes with Namath. And the producer said to her, all you need is 3.5 minutes of Joe and you got everything you need.
There you go.
And then, of course, Staubach, his famous line, I could say this, you know, because it's common knowledge. I love sex just as much as Joe Namath. I just like it with one girl. I love that line. That was so cool of Staubach. That line is just so
Oh, my
perfect.
Gosh.
That was so Captain America.
Yeah.
That was so Roger Staubach, man.
Yeah, just those two glimpses into those stories doesn't tell you a little bit about Namath and Staubach, if you're not familiar with them as well. But,
yeah
all the characters that she got to be around during the NFL at that time were
and
incredible.
And having to deal with Jimmy the Greek.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, Musburger was in his prime.
Yep.
He's not anymore.
Nah.
Yeah, but, you know, all the best to you, Brett Musburger. Get off the Raiders radio. Yeah, bring Papa back, baby.
Yeah, there you go. Well, Rick, it's always a pleasure to have you in here, man, especially on Fridays.
It's always my pleasure, man. It's always a pleasure talking sports with you.
Can't think of a better way to end the week off than having you in here in studio.
That's for sure. Thank you, buddy. I always appreciate the opportunity. Everybody have a great weekend out there. And check out all this information. Phyllis George, baby.
Yes.
The interviews with Namath and Staubach.
Yes, enlighten yourself with the history of her career, because it is worth a look into.
Those who do not learn from history are doomed to repeat it.
There you go. He is Saxman Rick. We'll be back with some more news out of Major League Baseball here on the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Is your technology infrastructure meeting the demands of your customers, your employees, you? How does your network scale to support your growth plans? With distribution hiding behind every corner, it's time you benefited from a network and security provider that will guide your organization through rapid technology change. Blackfoot, here to enable what's next. Visit blackfoot.com/SDWAN to learn more.
Well, as baseball talks continue to resume and ongoing, more so around testing and the pay scale, as well as other things going on, former Atlanta Brave Tom Glavin has come out and given kind of a precautionary warning to players about how to go about this return to play and the negotiations around it. Because Glavin served as a players' union rep during the 94-95 baseball strike. And he was worried about, you know, kind of how the players had been publicly kind of talking about Major League Baseball and wanting their pay and wanting their money and all of that. And Glavin kind of put this sentence or this warning out there that basically said, you know, you might take the blame for the sport not returning. And if that's what it comes down to, he also said that, you know, players should be careful about how much they talk about their pay. Because while, yes, I mean, anybody for any job they're doing would want to get paid the amount that they were told or they agreed upon, but also remember that even if you get a couple $1,000s less and you still make a couple $100,000 or maybe $60,000-$70,000, whatever it might be, you're probably in a better financial position than a lot of people that have had to go through this coronavirus right now. So as much as we want sports to return, as much as you want to get back to playing, you're not really in that much or as big of a financial issue as some other Americans might be facing right now. So we can all understand someone wanting to get paid the right amount of money and wanting to get, you know, their full services paid for. But you also have to be, you know, I think aware of the time that you live in right now, and you are not going through the toughest financial situation. You have, I would imagine they have some money from their past playing days, and you might not be making as much this season as you were hoping to make. Your thousands of dollars that could still be coming in is better than some people in the United States and around the world that are not getting any money right now for whatever reason that might be. So stand up for yourself, absolutely. Stick up for yourself and what you want and what you think you have earned and what you're owed. Because, you know, if you don't do that, you just get walked all over in any scenario. But also be kind of aware that you're not in as tough of a position as other people might be. So while you should stand up for yourself and fight for what you think you deserve, don't cross the line, don't go too heavy on it. Because if that does become the reason that Major League Baseball doesn't come back or doesn't have a season this year, it's because pay couldn't be agreed upon because the players wanted more, that could be a really bad look for baseball as you try to get this season going. So continue to fight for your money and what you think you should be paid, but you also got to keep in mind that you might have to and probably will have to not get paid as much money this year and just be okay with that because you're still going to be earning at least thousands of dollars in most cases. But that is the show today. Thank you so much to our pal Rick for coming in and talking to us. Appreciate his time. Thank you to everybody who tuned in. I hope you have a very safe weekend. Don't forget all the classic sports coming up on Monday, Memorial Day, here on ESPN Radio, starting at 9 a.m. with Super Bowl I. Enjoy your Memorial Day as well. Be safe out there and keep yourself entertained as we hope to see sports back. And we all hope to see some normalcy back sooner than later. But have a great weekend, everybody. Peace.